Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, June 18th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, I wanted to mention at the top of the show, I just wanted to plug my article that I put together and spoke about on the podcast last week, which is called Where Have All the Memorable Movie Themes Gone? Hollywood Composers Speak Out. So this is one of those things that like I put a couple of months worth of work into this thing. I interviewed a ton of people, including Michael Giacchino and a lot of like Oscar winning folks. And, you know, whenever you work on a big project like that, you just want it to have a little bit of extra life to it. You want people, as many people as possible, to see it because you justify all the time spent on it. So it's just one of those things where like you drop it on a Thursday or whatever and like hope that people catch up with it. But folks are busy. Maybe people missed the episode of the podcast where I talked about it. Maybe people never got around to it. So anyway, I just wanted to extend the life of this article a little bit. So check that out if you have not read it yet. I'm going to link to it directly in the show notes so you can check it out there.
If my opinion means anything to anybody listening to this, I thought it was fantastic. And I thought it was like, it was something I hadn't thought about and your headline like immediately made me think about it because I didn't even know you were working on it. So when it got published, I saw it just like everyone else did. And yeah, like I thought it was fantastic. So like Ben did not tell me to say this. I'm saying this like it's really good. Please go read it.
Well, thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. Okay. Also, just a quick bit of business here. We're not going to have a podcast tomorrow. We will be back on Thursday. I think most of the full-timers at Slash Film are off for Juneteenth tomorrow. So I just wanted to mention that real quick. All right, let's get into the news. Ryan, how did Inside Out 2 perform at the box office?
We talked a little bit, I think, last week at some point about the tracking for this and how it might perform. And for about 3 weeks solid, Inside Out 2 was pegged somewhere between like the low to mid 70s to like the mid 90s, but most tracking had it at about $85 million, which would have been, to be clear, very good. Would have been close to the original. Everyone would have been happy. Well, boy, do we have a reason to celebrate. Inside Out 2 nearly doubled its tracking. The final numbers came in. So a lot of the people have been discussing the estimate number, which was $155 million domestic. The final number came in. It was $154.2 million domestically. So pretty close. And then it made $140 million internationally. So its global opening was $294.2 million, making it the biggest global opening ever for any animated movie, period. It is the second biggest domestic animated opening ever, second only to Incredibles 2 in 2018. And fun fact, director Kelsey Mann now owns the record for the biggest opening for a feature directorial debut of all time, overtaking Deadpool. Wow. So holy crap, did this do some business? yeah, I mean, look, this is one of those examples where I thought tracking was going to be a little soft on this one. I, in my head, had thought like, yeah, you know, I think this might, and I talked in our Slack last week, like, I think this might do 100 million or more, but I mean, you know, when you're tracking is optimistically at 95 million and you do essentially 155, that's crazy. And, yeah. You know, it's an example. Tracking's been way off in recent years in some cases. And, you know, I go back to Suicide Squad in 2016. I go back to It in 2017. Movies that just obliterated tracking. And this now holds its place in history as a movie that just, you know, predictions just weren't even close.
Do you remember what the difference was in those examples that you just mentioned of like how far off they were compared to how far off the tracking was for Inside Out 2?
I remember It being like the biggest one like that I can ever remember. And I mean ever. Like it was, I actually wrote a Tales from the Box Office last year for its fifth anniversary, and I did end up pulling up the specific numbers. So It predictions, and mind you, this was leading up to the release of It, predictions swelled to 60 million, meaning like, oh wow, it's going to make $60 million on opening weekend. Well, it grossed 123 million. So like that's still the biggest I don't know that we'll ever do better than that. Like that was as big as it's ever going to be, but this was in a similar ballpark. So yeah. Big deal.
Okay, so I think the natural next conversation point here is like what this means for Pixar. And, you know, we talked all about the actual movie itself on Friday's episode of the show. I encourage people to go back and listen to that if you want like a discussion about the quality of the movie. But in terms of like the business side of it and what this could do for the studio, like we already know that Bob Iger and Disney and Pixar have decided to go all in on sequels, right? They've already announced at least three upcoming sequels that are in the works and maybe even scheduled, like dated at this point already for the next few years. So the question is, do you think that because this is a sequel, they're just going to triple, quadruple down on this strategy? Or do you think there's any hope that this means, okay, Pixar is back. Maybe there's a chance we get back to the Pixar of old where that studio was churning out a ton of original movies that were performing really well and critically beloved and audience beloved and all of that. What do you think about the future of Pixar right now?
Look, I am of two minds about this. I think it's easy for a company like Disney to do what it does best and lean heavily into the franchises here and go, you know, this is how we be safe with Pixar. This is, we just make sequels, we make spin-up. And there was that big Bloomberg article from, I think, like a week and a half ago, where they talked about how, you know, Pixar is going to change its strategy, move towards, you know, more franchise stuff, and, you know, stop making personal films, quote unquote, you know, like that, you know, because they felt like audiences didn't necessarily resonate with that. I would say a couple of things. First off, let's rewind the clock a little bit, not to belabor this point again, but let's go back to what Elemental did last year. Elemental opened with just $29.6 million. It seemed like a disaster on opening. It did, however, finish with $154.4 million domestically, and more importantly, made $485 million worldwide. It lagged out like crazy. I think that was the beginning of sort of reinvesting in Pixar as a theatrical concern. I think Lightyear was done dirty in several ways. It came out in 2022, which was still very much a recovery year. The marketing was confused. There were issues with that movie. And I think in 2023, Lightyear would have made more money. That's my belief. So I think because you sent Soul, Luca, Turning Red to Disney Plus for free, you didn't even charge for them. You devalued Disney. You devalued Disney's crown jewel immensely. And Bob Iger has even said as much without, you know, like, obviously corporate speak, but he acknowledged that. So I think there's that. And I think you had to reinvest in building that back up. I think the double hit of Elemental legging out as much as it did to Inside Out 2 opening as big as it did says Pixar can be back and maybe is back in some ways. Half of that equation is an original movie. I don't think Inside Out 2 maybe makes as much as it did without what happened with Elemental. I would go so far as to say that. So here's my hope that, okay, are you going to make as much with the originals all the time? Maybe not. Like, but this has been Pixar's business model from the beginning. The original Toy Story made $365 million worldwide. Now, granted, that was in 1995. But you don't get to Toy Story 3 making $1 billion worldwide in 2010 at a time when $1 billion was almost never seen without that. So, you know, that's what I would say. And I would also say, if you look at, you know, the bar for success for an original, Elemental making nearly $500 million worldwide, WALL-E is the only Pixar movie with the Criterion release, and it made $532 million worldwide in its day. You know, so, like, it's still successful, just not as big as some of these other ones. Cars made $461 million worldwide, and that had a trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, my point being, the bar for success for the originals has always been a little bit lower, but the idea is that you then capitalize on that with sequels. Yep. That's just business 101. And so I don't see, like, to that point, if you made Elemental 2 and it came out in a handful of years, it'd probably make a lot more money than this one did, barring another collapse of the industry or something we can't foresee. But applying any industry logic that we currently have, you know, that's the idea. So yeah. I think it would be foolish for Disney to start kneecapping originals within Pixar. Of course you're going to make Toy Story 5. Of course you're going to do some of these things you're doing. But you also have got to rely on stuff like Elio coming out next year and some of these other things. And so maybe they're going to be a little more diligent about how they approach those originals. And yeah, maybe they won't allow a Coco through, which is a shame. But I think you still have to have those. And so I sincerely hope I'm not the only one smart enough to see that.
Yeah.
I don't need to monologue about this too much, but I think that's important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's kind of like it's a microcosm of the conversation that we've been having about Hollywood in general, like the idea of sequels and franchises and IP and all that stuff. Like, you have to generate new stuff for there to be IP to expand on, you know, in certain ways. So, like, nobody wants to see A Bug's Life 4 or whatever. Like, Pixar, if they don't keep making new movies, they're just going to be recycling the existing properties forever, and they can't get away with that. So it's just a matter of, like, what the balance is going to be moving forward of what they strike in terms of sequels, and maybe they need a few more sort of home runs or whatever before they can get back to releasing a few originals in a row, for example, or whatever. But
yeah, but I think the pattern had been, like, sort of, you know, so we had, and if you look at the stretch between 2017 and 2020, right before the pandemic, you know, you had Cars 3, Coco, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4. So you had like three originals. Oh, and Finding Dory before that. So you had, you know, four, you know, sequels sandwiched around one original, but then you had the run of originals. So I think maybe you get closer to a pattern like that moving forward again. Who knows? But yeah, again, I just think you can't abandon the originals. It's easy to see why, and I hope Disney's smart enough to see that.
Yeah. Well, congrats to the folks who worked on Inside Out 2. This is a big deal. An historic box office weekend. So definitely a big deal there. I wanted to mention the first story details for the new Jurassic World movie or Jurassic Park movie, whatever they end up calling this thing. Ryan, I know you and I have talked about this movie before. Gareth Edwards is directing this. There's a rumored title for it called Jurassic City.
Floating around for a while, by the way. That's not new.
Okay, that was new to me. I'd not heard that. I'm not as deep into the rumor mines as you are in this particular film. That's kind of a pretty cool title. What do you make of that, if that's real?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's sort of, I think one of the things that it says to me is that it'll be relatively contained, because you're not saying world, right? You're saying like that we're kind of restricting this to a location. Mm-hmm. If you look at some of the rumored plot details, which sound a little boring on the surface, if you apply that to that title, it gets a little potentially interesting. I think I don't want to speculate too much because I have a thought of what might be happening here. But I mean, unless you want me to, I'm happy to. I continue to have a lot of hope for this. Again, Mahershala Ali, 2-time Oscar winner, is in this damn thing. I mean, come on, you know, that script must have been pretty good.
Scarlett Johansson starring alongside him as well. The rumored plot details are this movie is being described as a completely fresh take launching a new Jurassic era following three adults and three teens getting stuck on the island. So, go ahead. Tell me what your thought is about this one, Ryan.
Well, there's been a few set photos that show almost nothing, but there's like this seaside village type thing that it looks like they're filming in. I don't know which island they're saying because it could be, you know, it depending on where this takes place in the timeline. If we recall, like Isla Nublar was blown off the map, you know, by in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. So let's assume this takes place after Dominion or something. Maybe this is Site B. We have not been to Site B in a long time. And maybe some weird population of people have developed this city around these dinosaurs. And maybe that's where they are. And maybe there's this weird... You know, like, so I think this idea that maybe, like, because dinosaurs are just part of the existence of humanity now, certain sections of humanity have just decided to, like, you know, home up with the dinosaurs. And I think that would be kind of cool. I don't know that. But so that's my best guess right now, is that it's probably Site B and it could be some weird sect of humanity deciding to coexist with these prehistoric creatures.
Okay. So I like that as a theory. Yeah, we'll see if that pans out. That would be interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, with that cast, with that director, with, you know, it offers something potentially new. And so I remain foolishly optimistic about this one.
I wonder how many people are remaining foolishly optimistic about Blade, Marvel Studios' new movie that has not actually gone into production yet and has been in some form of development for many, many years. It was officially announced at San Diego Comic-Con 2019, if memory serves.
I was in that room.
Yeah, Mahershala Ali went up on stage. Kevin Feige gave him a Blade hat, and it was like one of the last announcements of the big Marvel panel of that day. And yeah, this movie has basically become like a cursed film because now it has lost yet another director. Jan Demange was signed on to direct this, and he was already replacing somebody. There have been like several reports about different people coming on to rewrite the story, and Mahershala Ali. I think there was a rumor at one point, or maybe even like a report in like one of the trades or something, that he was like close to walking away from the project.
That's been reported multiple times by reliable sources that he was prepared to walk. And also, I think my last count, I could be wrong, I think it was 8 different writers that have been announced. That was my count. And some big names, by the way. Like not like, you know, polished jobs. Like we're talking big people that have signed on. So,
yeah. Oof, man. So yeah, once again, Blade finds itself without a director, and it was just a bummer because, as we've said on this podcast before, like Blade seems like a fairly simple, a comparatively simple concept, you know, when you match it up with or stack it up next to a lot of the, you know, sort of intergalactic stuff that Marvel is working on, or like the, yeah, just like universe spanning things. Like
this isn't
think...
like trying to crack Guardians of the Galaxy,
right?
Like which made no sense at the time. Yeah. This should be, you and I are not the only people to say this. The whole of film Twitter has said this many times.
Yes.
The crazy thing is that like one of the trades recently had a thing about Mahershala Ali's like lawyer was like, yeah, he signed that deal in 2019 and it's 5 years later. We haven't been in production. This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And like, And as someone else pointed out, if you look at his IMDb, it seems like what's happened is he's been holding for production on Blade and probably has missed out on a bunch of projects because he yeah. hasn't done a whole lot in these, you know, and it's just like, man, you dude in like 5 prime years of his career, you know, yeah. like, so I don't know. He's probably about fed up.
That's a bummer for sure. You know, the only potential good thing I could think of about that is like the idea of stepping away a little bit. Maybe absence makes the heart grow fonder and people will be more excited to see him pop back up because there's always that danger of like overexposure that's happened to a lot of actors where they sign on to a flurry of projects that are all released, you know, in the same year or like the same couple years or something. And people just kind of get sick of them in a way. And Mahershala Ali winning I think he won his two Oscars back to back, if not mistaken, or at least within
close
like 2 years.
Yeah. Within like, it was very short period of time. Yeah.
So like maybe he was potentially, you could say that he was running the risk of like being in that zone or whatever. And so like, I'm just trying to find some sort of silver lining to this. Cause it's a pretty bleak situation.
Well,
but,
right. And like, I don't want to do this, but like, and I think I talked about this before, Wesley Snipes is 61 now. His last Blade movie came out in 2007. Mahershala Ali is 50 years old now. I think that the difference between signing on to do this when you're 45 and this movie not coming out until you're 53.
Yeah.
You know, and then I don't know. That's the, I'm not being ageist or anything. I'm not saying you can't do action like this well into your 50s. Keanu Reeves proves us wrong all the time.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
But there is a limit, you know, there and so I question to what degree he wants to spend the next 10 years of his life, you know, doing this. And mm-hmm. so I don't know. We'll see. But I question what the future of this is.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to our next story here, which is that a surprising actress could have played Jason Voorhees' mom in the canceled A24 Friday the 13th show that was in the works for Peacock. Tell me about that, Ryan.
Well, it's not quite canceled. So let's first say that the wrap had a big report come out about the Crystal Lake TV show, which was Brian Fuller's big Friday the 13th TV show that was in development. It was going to be at Peacock and A24, the studio behind, you know, Civil War and a bunch of these other big prestige movies, was developing the show. Well, a couple months ago, Brian Fuller and his other co-showrunner were fired from the project very abruptly and kind of left things uncertain. So this report has a lot of information in it. And it's a lot of he said, she said. So it's a little hard to glean, you know, to say, to pick and choose like, well, they said this. But let's go over the big bullet points here. The big one is that, yeah, Charlize Theron, Oscar winner Charlize Theron, one of the biggest A-list stars in the world, was apparently in talks to play Pamela Voorhees, Jason Voorhees' mother. And the idea of the show is that the first season would have picked up almost immediately after Jason's drowning. And then it would have kind of, the idea is that if they had gotten to do the show as long as they'd wanted to do it, it would have remixed the first 4 movies with each season covering a movie, but kind of telling it in a different way.
Hmm.
So the first season would have been like the first Friday the 13th, which, as everyone surely recalls, Pamela Voorhees was the killer. And Jason doesn't emerge as the killer until the second movie. So you would have had Charlize Theron leading a very expensive season of television as Pamela Voorhees. Now, the other report, part of the report here, is that supposedly the budget for the first season was going to be $85 million, which is crazy. Now, part of this was that A24 was saying like they were way over budget. There was a lot of allegations of A24 being a little inexperienced with how to handle a big TV show like this. it was all kinds of stuff, but you know, the stuff about issues about writers potentially getting paid, scripts not getting delivered, all kinds of stuff. But there's also insanely sounding cool stuff like Kevin Williamson, the guy who wrote Scream, doing what was described as this show's Red Wedding episode, referencing the Game of Thrones episode, which would have been taking place in the frozen tundra of Crystal Lake. And Kevin Williamson once on Twitter describes this as an hour-long chase episode. Wow. So, you know, there's stuff like that that we're missing out on. Supposedly, they're still looking to make the show. Nick Antosca, who known for like Channel Zero, is apparently being eyed to take over. But if he does, they would throw out all the scripts, start from scratch. Agents apparently described the project as radioactive right now because of everything that's gone down. So there is skepticism as to whether or not it actually happens. So I don't know. Sounds like they already spent a ton of money on it. Sounds like they were going big. Just a mess is really the word for it.
That's really unfortunate because that sounds like it would have been pretty rad, despite being on Peacock, which I'm not sure how many people have Peacock. I'm not sure what Peacock's future is in the streaming wars. It's a whole other conversation.
I mean, this would have got me to Peacock. Like, I do not subscribe to Peacock. This would have gotten me in the bag for Peacock for as long as the show was running. Yeah. You know, and I think that's the idea. I think it's insane that it was going to cost this much money, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's a lot. I mean, it's crazy. If you got Theron, if you got Charlize Theron in there, I can't imagine who you could have got or what resources would have been at your disposal. That's what I think about.
Could have been pretty killer. Okay, so speaking of very expensive television shows, a Game of Thrones spinoff called 10,000 Ships was in the works for a long time and then was, I guess, abruptly canceled at some point, I think last year, maybe earlier this year. It was in the works back in 2021. I think it may have been announced even like slightly before that. But now George R. R. Martin says that, hey, this project that seemed to be dead is not actually dead. We are working on it still. He's hired a new writer. Her name is Ebony Booth. She won a Pulitzer Prize for her theater play Primary Truth. And now Martin says on his personal blog that a new pilot is being worked on by Booth right now. So, you know, who knows whether HBO actually ends up moving forward with this, but I just wanted to mention it real quick for people who care a lot about Game of Thrones and the whole world of Westeros with House of the Dragon being back on and people diving back into that world in a big way. You know, just wanted to clock that. And you can go to the article at Slash Film to get more details about what the history of that project is and what that show will be if it actually comes to light. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back. We have a lot more news to talk about.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
Wow, gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam!
¡Mua! Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, Ryan, let's talk about Alamo Drafthouse and Sony. What happened last week? This is a big story.
Yeah, this is huge. Sony Pictures, the studio, Sony Pictures, bought the Alamo Drafthouse theater chain. So what happened is there used to be this thing called the Paramount Decrees, and that sort of prevented studios from owning theaters. Those were shot down a handful of years ago. And we had heard that the Alamo Drafthouse was up for sale, but like, what's interesting in our business is that like we will often hear whispers of a thing before it happens. Nobody had like with Sony buying, you know, emerging as a buyer. And yeah, so this is a big deal. It's the first studio effectively to own a chain now. Like Netflix owns like a theater or two. Amazon owns a theater in LA, I believe. But this is a chain. The seventh biggest chain in the country, I believe. The thing is that Sony is keeping all of the people in place. The CEO is still there. The creative team is still there. So it doesn't seem like they want to upend the business model as it exists. But to pretend this isn't like a big change would be silly. But, yeah. You know, there's like an optimistic way to look at it and a pessimistic way to look at it. And just depend, you know, there's no way to really know until this goes on for a while. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The Alamo Drafthouse has 35 theaters in total across the country right now. And so this is not like, you know, if a major studio tried to buy AMC or something like that, like that would be a much, much bigger deal. I don't even know if this could necessarily even be considered like dipping a toe in the water toward an end goal like that for another studio, because the theater business is so... like unsteady and unreliable, right? Like I know that the business of making movies is also unsteady and unreliable. So I'm not sure why a major studio would be interested in buying a major theater chain. Like this seems boutique enough. It seems small enough of an experiment for Sony to just buy the Drafthouse and be like, hey, now we have 35 locations to worry about, really. This is not like a huge, huge thing. We can experiment with some programming. We can throw more anime on there. I've seen a lot of people say that because Sony owns Crunchyroll and because anime has become a much more bigger deal box office wise in the past few years, that this might be a way for Sony to kind of like help get those projects out there.
That that's probably going to happen. Yeah.
But like, you know, if you're talking about looking at this through a positive or negative lens, like I'm having trouble coming up with negative lenses to view this through right now, because it just seems like such a, kind of a small thing. Like I know on paper it's huge. Oh my God, like a movie studio bought a theater chain. Like that is huge because it hasn't happened in many, many years. But, I don't know, like in the execution of it, I guess we'll find out. But like as of right now, and maybe I'll look back on this podcast episode and be like, oh, you sweet, simple fool, what were you thinking? Or something like that, you know. But as of right now, I'm kind of like, yeah, this, you know, sure, this makes sense. Like it doesn't seem like they're doing anything, like you said, to upend the culture of the Drafthouse. Like that, in fact, is probably a big part of the reason why they bought it, because people who go to Drafthouse like love movies, and that part of the reason that they go to that theater, they seek out that theater, is for the experience of really getting into a movie theater that actually cares about projection and quality and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, one of my big takes was that there are lots of regional chains they could have bought theoretically, and like some of them are much more set up where if Sony had grander plans to make this in their own image, they could have just bought a different chain, redid everything and been like, this is what we want. The Drafthouse, it wouldn't make any sense to gut that and change it too much. They clearly bought it because they liked it. Yeah. And again, it is a small enough. Now, like if you look at how much money Netflix, Paramount Plus, or let's look at failing streaming services like Paramount Plus or Peacock, how much money they're just throwing into like a coal fire on a daily yep. basis. The theater chain that they bought is not going to lose nearly as much money. Even if it comes close to breaking even, it's an interesting experiment for them. And then they still have assets they can sell. So it's like, I just don't see this as like all that risky for them. And it's a way for them to invest. Sony is one of the only studios without a major streaming service. Keep that in mind. Yep, they are very invested in the theatrical experience. So this is a way for them to potentially actually invest in that idea of movie going. So that's what I see this as. Keep in mind, Tom Rothman, the head of Sony, was recently arguing that theater chains should lower ticket prices and do all these audience-friendly things. Well, he is now in a position to actually do that. So, you know, I would feel differently about it if it wasn't a guy who was publicly saying that stuff weeks before this deal closed.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll have to see how, you know, how it shakes out. But I see no reason not to be optimistic about this at this moment. you know, fingers crossed, but I think this seems like a good thing right now. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm sure we'll have more to say about this in the coming, whatever, weeks and months and all that. But okay, for now, let's move on to just a few more news stories that I want to hit real quick. And then I want to get into this last one with you, Ryan, because I don't really know much about this last topic. But before we hit there, okay, so Practical Magic 2 is in the works. I talked about this movie. I saw it for the first time last October. I spoke about it on a podcast with BJ. Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman are coming back to reprise their roles from this movie from 1998. And at first I was kind of like, wow, that seems a little weird that they've waited this long to make this movie. And then I read your article and you pointed out like Hocus Pocus went from a flop to a beloved cult classic. And now there's a sequel to that movie on Disney Plus. And like, Hocus Pocus is a beloved film for that is replayed every single October for an entire generation, basically. Yeah, and so yeah. This makes a lot of sense when you look at it through those terms of like the licensing deals that could happen to play this movie on different streaming services, different TV channels in the years to come. Like all of this sort of makes a lot of sense, maybe even more so like financially than creatively. At this
yeah, if you get a staple holiday season movie that like can play every single year, it's money. It's like writing a Christmas song, you know. It's like money for years to come, and that's where Hocus Pocus made its money. And I think, like, you know, obviously, like if you own Home Alone, you know, you get money every single Christmas, well beyond all the money that made it the box office. And so I imagine that Practical Magic is a movie that does well for them in the library because it was not a success in its original run. This to me reeks of Hocus Pocus, like the similar thing. So it might not even be one of those things that maybe it doesn't make a lot of money in the short term, but it's I view this as a longer term type of investment because it can become a Halloween staple and you can make money for years to come. So it's a good library title potentially.
It was a very weird movie to me as somebody who just caught up with it for the first time last year. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Ryan.
I actually have not.
Okay. Yeah. It's just like the tone is so bizarre. It kind of like goes through these whiplash things of going back and forth between very, very, very different tones. But I have to say, I'm kind of intrigued at seeing gigantic stars like Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman coming back to work together again. So if it has to be in Practical Magic 2, then so be it. So you can go to /film.com and read more about that production there. I'm going to mention real quick that Henry Selick, the legendary stop motion director behind Nightmare Before Christmas, and he directed Wendell and Wild recently, has at least one, if not two, projects that are in the works now. We don't really have time to get into those at this moment, but I'll link to that in the show notes and people can find out more there. Jordan Peele's next movie, we don't really know much about it. I think it was originally supposed to come out on Christmas Day of this year and was bumped back to 2025. As of yesterday, he announced that the movie is actually going to be coming out on October 23rd, 2026. So that puts it like right before Halloween, which is probably a good contextual fit or whatever, given that he loves making horror stuff. So I'm bummed that we have to wait another year for a Jordan Peele movie, but I'm excited that.
Well, what does that make it? Almost five years between movies for him?
Yeah. When did Nope come out? 2022?
Oh, so 4 years.
Or
four
two,
years.
2022. Okay.
Yeah. Four and a half years, I think, because Nope was a summer movie. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of a bummer, but like, you know, if there's anybody who's proven that, you know, the stuff that he makes is probably worth the wait, it's going to be Jordan Peele. So
for sure,
I remain excited about that. Speaking of release dates, Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis, this movie that from every response that I've seen of it is like a total bonkers, bizarre, you have to see this to believe it type of movie, is finally coming to U.S. theaters in September, courtesy of Lionsgate, which I think has something of an established relationship with Coppola. I think they worked on a restoration of Apocalypse Now recently. So that movie, I think there was a, you know, it debuted at, I think, at the Cannes Film Festival earlier this summer, and nobody wanted to touch it. So there was a lot of hand-wringing about whether or not regular people would ever have the opportunity to actually see this movie. And now Lionsgate has stepped up to distribute it. So,
yeah. I mean, Coppola paid, like, he literally paid for the whole thing himself. So it was going to come out one way or the other. He was hoping for a larger distributor, bigger marketing campaign, all this stuff. He'd already had a deal with IMAX to get a run in IMAX. So my sense is that like Lionsgate is not one of the big boys. So I think that like this was probably not his first choice. But Lionsgate probably came in and got a sweetheart deal. Because they are not going to spend, they're not going to give him the $130 million back for it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he spent on. They're probably like, they probably get a sweetheart distribution deal. That's my guess.
Honestly, I have no idea if I'm going to like this movie, because from everything that I've read, it just seems like, you know, borderline unwatchable to some people. Somebody described it as Succession crossed with Batman Forever and a lava lamp, which is a description that I love. I can't even fathom what that actually is.
I literally was not going to see this movie until you just told me that. Like now I'm like, oh shit, all right.
I'm just like so excited about the idea of seeing a truly unfettered vision, which is just something that's very rare, as you know, in Hollywood. You know, obviously people have financiers to answer to and all that stuff. And now you've got the situation where a legendary director who made The Godfather and The Conversation and all these, you know, classic films decades later has been working on this project for a long, long time, put everything he has into it, funded it himself. And like, this is his vision for better or worse. And, you know, people can debate whether or not that, you know, the ultimate quality of the whole thing, but I'm just glad that somebody has stepped up and will give people the opportunity to see it so we can, you know, have those conversations.
100%.
So, okay. Last story real quick. The wildest horror movie of the 1980s is being remade from the director of Smiles. We know this, I think this came out, early last week, which is that, what is his name? Parker Finn, who directed Smile, is teaming up with Robert Pattinson, who is going to produce and star, and I think star in a remake of the 1981 movie Possession, which I've seen a lot of GIFs and still images from on the internet over the past few years, Ryan. I feel like this movie has had
I haven't actually seen it though.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because you're like more of a horror fan than I am.
I am. No, it's one of those ones. It's, you know how this is, and you and I've talked about this before, where you have your endless list of things that didn't come out in the last year or so that you need to watch eventually, but newer things take precedent all the time. Like I could have watched this, but I watched Critters 2 last night, so whatever. But like, I don't regret that, by the way. This is on my list, but this now moved way up my list because the amount of anger from people that have seen this movie at this news, where everyone like, don't do this, you know, like it, one of those like remakes where people just seem like they were touching the Holy Grail. I was fascinated by the response to this because Robert Pattinson is like one of the people that like film Twitter loves, and like,
yep,
I thought Smile was pretty good, and I think the Smile 2 trailer looks great, you know, like, so it's like, okay, so there seems to be a sacred cow here, so I'm very curious about this.
Yeah, it absolutely feels like a third rail situation where people are just like, this original movie that came out in the early 80s is like so singular that like it is an affront to good taste for anyone to even suggest the idea of somebody remaking it.
Yeah, my understanding why I'm really curious to watch it now is that what I'd seen is that it really, the movie feels like a lightning in a bottle situation where like recapturing that feels, you know, like a fool's errand, you know, so it's not even so much about like, you know, you can't remake this. It's just that like the whatever weird alchemy that exists that allows that movie to exist as it is, it just feels, you know, just silly to try and redo it. So
yeah,
how true that is, I don't know, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, one of these days, maybe you and I can both watch it and talk about it on an episode of the podcast.
Yeah. Something. And also this is one of those things where it's like studios are bidding over it, you know, we'll see, but like, it also could be one of those things that it just, things get bought, developed all the time that don't actually happen, you know? So like, there's no guarantee that this happens yet. So we'll see.
That's true. Okay. I think that's going to do it for today's show, man. We got through a lot of new stuff here. As always, check out the links in the show notes. There's a lot more there. And you can find more about every story that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features that you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you on Thursday.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free to play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.